On today's episode, we welcome Chris Schmid. Chris is the manager of learning for Ontario at St. John Ambulance. We will discuss their vital pet first aid course, which is currently being offered, and covers everything from shock, choking, hydration, dog bites, to pet first aid kits. I am, this one is a really important one, obviously, pet first aid. And I stumbled upon your website when I was searching because I've got a new puppy myself and he did a little choke and I went into panic mode. And I thought there's got to be something, there must be something equivalent. I know myself, and I mentioned this to you, that I've actually had been saved by someone else thanks to their quick thinking and their, you know, having the knowledge of having taken a CPR course. So I recognized the importance of that and stumbled upon your pet first aid, and I absolutely love it. It is so robust and there's so much preventative care that comes into it, and so really thrilled to have you on.
Thank you very much. Well, you know, what you point out is absolutely the reason that St. John Ambulance in Canada has decided to launch a pet first aid course, predominantly because there are just so many pets out there. And, well, let's face it, pets, they have accidents, they get hurt. You know, accidents happen, animals get hurt, and sometimes they do silly things, our dogs and cats. So we've created this pet first aid course, and it's been very popular.
And it's a pet first aid course that's available across Canada with all the St. John's Ambulance outlets?
Most of Canada has it. We do have it running. And again, you have to check the schedule and check in your area as to when it's running.
So tell us a little bit more about the course. Like, this is not a typical course. This has so much information with regards to everything from seizures to pet-proofing your home. So wondering if you can kind of walk us through what that day looks like. I know it's a full day course and it's a hands-on learning experience.
Great. Pet first aid is essentially that. It's first aid. It's to provide safe and effective first aid for emergency situations. What does that mean? Well, first aid is exactly that. It's the first thing that you do. It doesn't replace a veterinarian's expertise or their diagnostic capability. So all first aids really is all about is to save a life, prevent an injury or illness from becoming worse, and promoting recovery. So what we do, among the many things that we cover choking, CPR, bleeds, internal, external, burns, bone injuries, fractures, eye injuries, ear injuries, poisons, animal bites, car accidents, bloat, and much more. What we start off early on in the course is talking about is preventive measures. So things like having a good pet first aid kit, and yes, you heard me right, a pet first aid kit. There are different items that need to go in. While there are a lot of items that you can have in a first aid kit that are similar to a human first aid kit, other items that you want to have in it are things like plastic wrap, and I'll talk about that a little bit later, a flashlight so that you can look into an animal's ear or mouth. You want to have pen and paper so that should something happen at the park, you can make your notes down with it, extra pairs of gloves for lots of different reasons. So we do ask that people do consider buying a pet first aid kit. It can make all the difference in helping your dog. And we go into preventive measures because, again, the best offense, as everybody knows, is a good defense. And we really talk about as well knowing your 24-hour and having your 24-hour veterinary emergency clinic number handy and knowing what they can do and what they can't do, because sometimes we assume that your 24-hour clinic can do absolutely everything, and unfortunately the answer is they can't always. So knowing what they can do and what they can't do, and having your vaccination records, your pet's vaccination records at hand. So have them or a copy of them, believe it or not, in your pet first aid kit with you in your car. And then maybe creating a pet savings account or consider getting pet insurance. We then talk about knowing your pet. So what is normal with your pet? What's a normal pulse? What's a normal breathing rate? What is your pet's turgor? And what that is the scruff on the back of the neck. When you kind of gently grab it, how quickly does that release? That tells you with dogs and cats, their hydration and dehydration levels. And of course, it's different on different breeds. So, for example, a Dalmatian is very, very much different than, say, a Shih Tzu or a pug, or a Shar Pei. So we really talk about knowing your pet, and in different stages of life, things change as well. In addition to that, we'll give you homework to do. So what we do is we walk you through on our canine mannequins how to muzzle a pet using ordinary things found around your home. The importance of making things routine, like a pulse check. So where a pulse check is done on a dog is on what's called the femoral artery, and it's inside the back leg. So really underneath its thigh, there is a pulse, but you need to make that routine so that when you do want to check it, when your dog's hurt or you're worried about stress, is that you can do a pulse check on your dog so that it's absolutely routine for the dog. They're not concerned, they let you do it, and so on. Breathing checks, gum and teeth checks, and turgor checks should all be 100% routine for your dog. At that point, we get into what's called emergency scene management. So we don't think often in when our pet gets hurt. Maybe they've been in a fight. You've been at the stables and your dog's been kicked by a horse because it spooked the horse. Or unfortunately, you've had to stop suddenly and your dog was in the back seat and flew into the front seat, or worse. When an accident happens, there are key things that you need to do first, second, third, fourth. And we walk you really through that, everything from checking hazards to knowing your dog's body language, because we think that when our dog gets hurt, they're going to allow us to simply look after them. But you can't take, hundreds of thousands of years of evolution in a dog's mindset and their DNA out of them in 5,000 years of domestication. So when you go to touch an injured dog, their instinct kicks in. And when you go to touch an injured paw, an injured side, a bite mark to look at it, to clean it, your dog's primal instinct tends to be one of snapping at you and defending itself, even though it really knows better to know that you have no intention of hurting it if there's a rapport and a trust built. So what we do is we talk about canine body language and something called guarding. When we take wolves, for example, which are the ancestors of all dogs, and we see what they do when they're injured, they guard one side. So they present their uninjured side to any other dog and tilt away from their injured side so that it's not exposed. And that's what an animal tends to do, a dog and a cat tends to do. When they don't cower, if there's still a level of trust, they may still do that. So learning where that is, because again, we forget that our dogs can't tell us where they're hurt or what's happened. We then talk about muzzling with ordinary items so that should you have to look after an animal that has a fracture, say in its front leg or a hind leg, and you have to splint that, that's going to be painful for your dog as you're doing it. And of course, they don't fully understand that really the splinting is going to prevent the injury from getting worse, or really, it's really meant to reduce pain on the way to the veterinarian, but they don't understand that the act of splinting is going to be painful. So again, learning how to muzzle it. And again, if you've done the muzzle practice with them, it's routine. One of the things we do say is when you are practicing any of these muzzling, pulse checks, breathing checks, to reward your dog afterwards, either with loads of praise, which as we all know, dogs love, or a treat. And it got to the point with our dogs when I did this, you go to put a muzzle on them and the tail starts going because they know there's a treat or praise coming afterwards. So making things like that routine is super huge. And we talk about that. The next one of the big things that we get into is something called shock. And people don't really understand what shock is. And so in a nutshell, I'd like to really talk about what shock is. Shock is medical shock. It's not electrical shock and it's not surprise. It's really inadequate circulation of oxygen-rich blood to the body's organs and tissues. So all of our organs and tissues in all mammals require a constant blood flow of oxygen-rich blood. And when that gets interrupted or compromised, it's called medical shock. So let me give you an example of when that would happen. If a dog has got blood loss happening and there's more and more blood loss, the dog's body goes into a type of medical condition called shock to try and save itself from bleeding out, from losing too much blood. And what it does is it shuts down parts of the body that it knows aren't critical for blood flow. So it stops sending blood to its legs. It stops sending blood to non-vital organs. So organs start to slowly shut down. Your dog's gum, very, very gray or pale. Your dog's ears will get cold because what it's doing is it's saving all that oxygen-rich blood for the heart, the brain, the lungs, and the other vital organs that it needs to survive. Shock can often kill, and it's often not recognized. People die from shock every day at car accidents, and so do animals, but it's not recognized. So one of the things we teach you to do is to look for shock, and shock can happen from blood loss, dehydration. It can happen from anaphylaxis, poisons, heat exhaustion, seizures, convulsions. So one of the things that we talk about is first treat the injury or illness that is causing the shock when possible. In other words, stop the bleed. If it's a hypothermic situation or a heat exhaustion situation, warm or cool the pet as needed. So treat the underlying injury or illness, and that often reduces the shock and keeps your animal alive, because shock kills often before the actual injury or illness takes their life. So shock is often the first thing that is really treated at a veterinarian's office in an emergency situation. Did you have any questions so far?
Oh, this is all such good information. And it's, you talk about shock. I don't think that's something that a lot of people consider. They automatically go to what's next, right? And so realizing and recognizing that in an animal, incredible.
And there are all kinds of different signs for it, and we will teach that. So breathing rate, heart rate, the breathing rate will change and get shallower. The heart rate will change. So knowing your pet's heart rate is really, really important to recognize shock. Then we also get into anaphylactic shock, which is a type of shock. One of the things that we don't think of is that anaphylaxis, you tend not to go from zero to full-blown anaphylaxis. So in other words, if you were potentially allergic to shellfish and have never had shellfish in your life, your first time having shellfish typically doesn't put you into anaphylaxis. It's a buildup. So your first time, you might get a rash. Your second time, it'll get worse. Your third time, there might be swelling in the mouth. Well, we forget that dogs are mammals, and they follow a lot of that same type of situation with anaphylaxis. And of course, dogs like to eat everything. I always used to joke with my wife that if it hit the floor, it belonged to Marigold, our dog. It was hers. You know, she got to get the first taste of it. And often, if it's something that hit the floor, you didn't want her to eat. You had to be fast because she'd be over there. So dogs do tend to taste different things and try different things. And watching them to recognize an allergy in them because they can't tell you that they're having difficulty breathing or their mouth is swelling or what have you is again watching that body language and recognizing it so that if you're on your way to anaphylactic shock with a dog, you can recognize it and talk to your veterinarian about what to do. And we do have first aid that we talk about for anaphylaxis as well. Another thing that's very, very common that we like to talk about is vomiting in dogs. And there's so many causes for vomiting in dogs. Things from reasons such as overeating or what they call panic eating, where you've been out for the day and your dog's dinner time is behind by an hour. And of course, your dog hasn't forgotten that because they're food motivated animals. So when you do put the food down, sometimes, and some dogs are different than others, but sometimes your dog will just go to town and quickly overeat and eat in a frantic manner. And of course, that can often cause vomiting. Other things that can cause vomiting, and I'm talking persistent vomiting, not a one-off, allergies, poisons, parasites, obviously motion sickness. But the ones that we don't think of that are really key are brain injuries, intestinal obstructions, abdominal injuries, and believe it or not, cancer. Dogs are one of the few animals that, with certain cancers, that will show up in persistent daily vomiting. And it's something to watch for. And of course, it's more common in older dogs, but it does happen, and it happens with pancreatic cancers. It happens with a number of different cancers. Dehydration is another thing to look for, and it's not so much a big problem at this time of the year, but we will come out of this winter and go into summer. And of course, dogs will, just like children, they're having fun playing and they forget to drink. They actually are having so much fun in the backyard or at the park and having a great old time that they do forget to drink and they can get dehydrated. And serious dehydration can, of course, lead to shock and long-term, of course, death. But again, we talk about that Turgor test, which is gently grabbing the back of the neck, the scruff of the neck, and pulling on that when you know your dog's well hydrated. Talk to your vet about it. Other things that we talk about, of course, are choking because dogs, well, they grab things and play with things, and sometimes they take children's toys and they can choke on them. And we do talk about abdominal thrusts. What most people recognize is the Heimlich maneuver on a dog. It's an abdominal thrust. And we show you how to do it with our canine mannequins in the classroom and show you how to properly do clear an airway with a dog. Again, it's just like on people, it's usually very, very successful, but there are times where those items can be severely lodged in and there can be partial breathing. And again, that would be another example of where your 24-hour clinic is so important. We think, well, our vet's in the neighborhood, our vet's right around the corner. But dogs tend not to have their accidents and their emergencies between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. They tend to have them.
Nope.
Yes, and everyone listening knows they tend to have them at 10 o'clock at night, Sunday morning at 9 a.m. They tend to have them when the vet tends to be closed because it's not convenient. So they don't follow a clock or a calendar with vets getting being open and so on. We do talk about wounds. One of the things that sometimes will happen, and it's usually at the off-leash park where there's another dog who's a little bit more aggressive in play, and maybe they don't They're not attacking your dog, but they're playing a bit rough. And your dog can get a bite and the wound can open. And we talk about how to clean that wound properly, how to sterilize that wound, when to seek veterinary attention for it. And that comes back to even full bites where, you know, your little guy has gone out into the backyard to relieve himself before bed. And of course, around the corner of the house comes a raccoon or even a fox. And of course, that never ends well. And those types of injuries can be serious because of rabies. Now, people say to me, well, I've had my dog vaccinated for rabies, but you haven't been vaccinated for rabies. And therein lies the problem, because it is the saliva of the rabid animal that actually carries the rabies virus. So you need to be very, very careful when touching your dog, to be wearing gloves, to properly clean and disinfect that bite, so that you don't take that and then accidentally touch your face. And we know all about this all too well right now with the COVID situation, the pandemic situation, about touching our eyes. But again, with rabies, we think, well, our animal's been protected with a vaccine, but we haven't. And rabies can kill people too. It's something that we can get infected with. There's a focus also on nosebleeds that we cover. And in covering the nosebleed situation, it's a lot different than a nosebleed on a person, because we tend to pinch the nose and put our head down. You can't do that with a dog. So what we do is we talk about using the use of cold or cool towels, wet towels, and being able to deal with that so that we can stop that. So cold, damp towels on the forehead, on the snout if you have a long snouted dog, or if you don't, you often have to use the back of the neck to slow that blood flow and keep track of the blood flow. So keep all the rags that you use, so that should it be something that you can't stop, take those rags with you to the vet. And that brings up a really, really good point. Is one of the things we talk about with respect to poisons. There are so many things that can poison dogs and cats. And some of them, unfortunately, are plants that we have around the house. We wouldn't think of eating them or taking a leaf off and eating them, but, you know, dogs are curious. So one of the things that we suggest is, with respect to any kind of poison, if it's in a container that's spilled, take the container with you to the vet, so that two things happen. One, they can read the label and know exactly what it is and what strength it is, and also know often how much typically has been taken if it was a full container. With respect to plants, take a picture of the plant if you're not entirely sure what the plant is, but try and figure out what the plant is. So poisonous plants to dogs are castor oil bush, is one, laburnum, azalea can be, foxglove, ivy, certain ivies, some species of ivy. The good thing is that most dogs typically don't care for these plants that are poisonous, but knowing them and knowing to, again, put them either higher in your house if you have them where your dog can't reach it, or possibly avoiding having them in the garden or in the house, so that, again, it's that preventive measure. Do you have any questions so far? Or?
No, I mean, I know you're just scratching the surface on this, so I can't even imagine what the day looks like. And I'm looking forward to taking the course myself coming up soon. One thing that I did want to ask you is, how would people find a course like this? Can you share your website?
Yes. So in various provinces, you'll have your provincial links in Canada. So St. John Ambulance, look up St. John Ambulance and you can add a city name, a town name to the end of that. So if you say, for the sake of argument, St. John Ambulance, Toronto, or St. John Ambulance Calgary, you can do. You can also look up your province. Now, in other countries, because I know that this podcast is available all over, we do have other organizations around the world that we are aware of that offer a pet first aid course. Typically, rather than just searching for it and searching it online, reach out to your first aid provider in your town or city and ask them. Because again, we insist that all our pet first aid instructors in Canada have two things. One, that they're a human first aid instructor so that they've got the background and the knowledge. And in many cases, the nurses, their pharmacists, their paramedics. So they have some sort of a medical background in many cases. And they've taught human first aid because at the end of the day, a bleed's a bleed. CPR is massaging the heart, oxygenated blood, shock. There are so many similarities. So we ask that one, that they're that. And the second thing is that they've had a history of pet ownership. So check with your first aid organization to see if they have a pet first aid course. And I suggest that they're often the best ones to start with because they've got the experience from doing first aid training.
Thank you so much for all of your insight today. And we look forward to chatting again.
My pleasure. It's an absolute pleasure. And I want to thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of New Dog, Now What? If you know someone with a new dog in their life, please be sure to share this episode with them. And follow along on Instagram at newdoglifeca. Thanks for joining.